And now we have with us a senior fellow in the governance studies at Brookings, the former ambassador, Norman Eisen. And he's actually with us from his studios at the Brookings Institute in Washington, D.C. Ambassador Eisen, thank you so much for being with us.
Eric, thanks for having me back on the show.
You bet. Now, to our guests, you may remember we had Ambassador Eisen on the show, and he was here. The last time he was here, he was actually speaking with us about the Emoluments Clause. And Ambassador, you did not disappoint. I want to thank you again for a very spirited conversation on that issue. But now we want to speak with you about this really fascinating book that you've written. And Ambassador, I have to be honest, when I got this book, I was very disappointed because I thought it was going to be a book about emoluments and your fight with the administration over that. And so when I saw this book, I thought, what is this? And then I jumped in and it just took a hold of me and I just couldn't put the book down. I mean, it was a really and then the opening where you have this conversation with your mom on Air Force One about your new post, that will tug at anyone, you know, when you have like these conversations with your parents and you're really getting from them the feelings that have shaped their lives. And at the time, I believe your mom was 90 years old and she was a Holocaust survivor. And to now hear you, her son, talking about going back to a place that brought so much terror in her life and her hesitancy with you doing it, it was just so amazing to me.
Well, thank you for saying so, Eric. And I was inspired to write this book, The Last Palace, because when I left my job in the Obama administration after 2 years, the president was kind enough to say, Norm, you did a good job. I'm sending you back to your mom's homeland. I'm sending you back to Prague. And I went back to live in that house in Prague, and I discovered that underneath the table there was a swastika, a mark of the past. And that discovery led me on a journey through the past century, through the incredible lives of the people who lived in that house, and through my mom's life as a Czechoslovak, American, Jewish, Holocaust survivor and survivor of communism. And those four of the people who lived there before me and my mom, I weave that together into the century-long story of democracy. But Eric, Donald Trump is not mentioned once in the book. The name Trump doesn't appear, and yet a number of my readers have said he's on every page. And that's because the book is about the fight for democracy and this recurring struggle over 100 years between democracy, those who love it, and those who hate it and fight it. And Trump is among the latter. So his name may not appear, but he's on every page.
You know, that's so interesting because when I read this book, I didn't see that at all. In fact, I became so enamored with the idea of this actual palace and everything that it took. I mean, in the first chapters of the book, you so painstakingly speak about, and I don't know if I'm pronouncing his name right, Otto Petschek, who actually builds this enormous palace, this last palace standing, and everything that he goes through, and then the battles that he has with his family in order to give him a financial lifeline to continue the palace, and then the war that we see that takes place, and the palace, and how the palace remarkably is still standing. I mean, that was the draw of the story. And actually, you just mentioned that story of the swastika underneath the nightstand, and I thought you tell your mom about that, and I think to myself, I'm thinking when I'm reading that, and I said to myself, why did he tell his mother that? And I thought, like, that's not going to want her to come there to be with you. That's going to just keep her away from you. You really did on that one.
You're much smarter than I am, Eric, because I never should have told Mom about that swastika. I thought she would be able to see it as I did. It's a symbol of triumph. I'm going back to her country where she was deported to Auschwitz by those same Nazi German occupiers who lived in this house, who seized this house from a Jewish family. And I'm representing the most powerful nation on earth, and that Nazi regime is dead and gone, destroyed and in ashes. But my mom didn't see it that way. She was nervous about that history. And one of the threads through the book is this debate between me and my mom about the present day. And what are we to make of it? And, you know, she was right. It's one of the ways the book relates to the present day.
Yeah.
She totally called the idea that anything can happen anywhere. But I will say that you make me feel good because I achieved my ambition. I wanted to write a serious history book and one that was relevant, but I wanted it also to be a good beach read. So like a hybrid between Gibbon and Danielle Steele. So if those five lives that I write about, their lives and loves, their successes and failures and losses against the backdrop of World War I, the Depression, the rise of fascism, World War II, the Cold War arrival, the long battle with the Soviets, the end of the Cold War, and now the whole thing's happening all over again, the fight between freedom and those who hate it on both sides of the Atlantic. So if I told those human stories against that historical backdrop, then I feel pretty good about the book.
You did. And everything in this book just took me back to this palace. And speak to our listeners, because, I mean, of course, we're going to get into President Trump and politics, and we can talk about all that. But I really want you to, and I don't want to give it away, because the grandeur and the detail that you offer in this book about this palace and what it is, it's just amazing. It's an amazing story to read, and it's an amazing triumph when it's finally completed. And the fact that it has lasted all of these years, I mean, I think it speaks to the legacy of Otto and now what this palace means, not only for his legacy, but for the United States, as it's now the embassy, the residence for our representative in the country.
Well, you know, the history of democracy in the past century, we're celebrating the 100-year anniversary of President Woodrow Wilson helping to win World War I and then going to Europe and say, now we're going to try doing democracy a new way. It's going to be a combination between American-style liberalism, liberal democracy, and the European style. And that 100-year anniversary that we're celebrating was commemorated. That Wilson doing that was commemorated in this house by Otto Petschek, Eric. He was such a genius. The treaties establishing Wilsonian democracy in Europe and a miniature United States, the country of Czechoslovakia, those treaties were signed at Versailles and Trianon, the French palaces. Otto actually took elements of Versailles and Trianon, combined them with American architecture, Frank Lloyd Wright, and a bunch of other ideas to produce this incredibly gorgeous, one-of-a-kind, 150-room-plus mansion as a tribute to those ideas. And so, you know, for me, the house is a symbol of these ideas that I fight for every day. I was fighting for them when I filed the emoluments case. And the most dangerous moment, that house has survived over great danger again and again. At the end of World War II, it was almost destroyed in the uprising in Prague, the last days of the war, and the occupant, General Toussaint, the German general, was so transformed by living in this architectural monument that I believe influenced by Otto's design in that house, he turned around. I won't give it away, but I'll tell you, he saved the house. He saved Prague from destruction. He saved all the people in Prague from destruction, and he turned on the SS at the end of the war. It's an incredible unknown story that's in there. Oh, and I have something else exciting to tell you. History is going to be made here at Brookings. I'm talking to you from our studio, which more than anybody else, I talk to SiriusXM from this studio. So you guys are such wonderful friends. I'll make this announcement for you. We're bringing the book to life on Monday at Brookings at 9:30 a.m. We're going to have a panel of Otto's descendant, the German general's descendant, Steinhardt. Come on down, Eric. You can broadcast live from here. Ambassador, the Cold Warrior, his descendant, who saw the Cold War, tried to prevent the Cold War, save that house, Steinhardt, and the movie star ambassador, Shirley Temple Black, who helped end the Cold War. Her son's going to be here. We're going to have a direct descendant of all four of those characters in the book meeting with me and for a celebration, a panel here at Brookings starting at 9:30. And I want to invite all your listeners to come and pay us a visit. You can register on the Brookings website. We're almost sold out, so hurry, guys. Special offer for SiriusXM POTUS listeners.
Thank you so much, Norm. We really appreciate that. It's so funny that you bring up Toussaint, because I'm actually in the book right now, and it's interesting because it seemed as though it was some type of divine intervention, because he seemed to, just reading the book, he seemed to take not only great pleasure but pride in the palace. And it's very interesting because there's a passage in the book where it says the keenly observant Toussaint must have noticed that Otto's Jewish books remain in the library, and he didn't remove any of those books, any of those artifacts that he knew was Jewish. It was almost like he was maintaining that legacy, not only of the builder of the palace, but also of the Jewish faith, and this was a general of Hitler's, and it seemed that there was some type of empathy that he seemed to share with the legacy of that place. And I thought, what is really going on here?
Yeah, it's one of the mysteries, you know, when you try to crack the code, and now all these decades later, seven decades later, I'm trying to understand what was going on with General Toussaint. And I was so surprised when I got into the archives. I traveled all over the world. I looked at hundreds of thousands of pages, interviewed dozens and dozens of surviving witnesses, many of whom passed because they were in their 90s. While I was working on the book, and there was no place where I was more careful or more surprised than General Toussaint, because he turned out to be a very reluctant German general, rejected the overtures of the Nazis, never joined the Nazi Party, was a favorite of Hitler's nevertheless. Hitler called him the brown-eyed general. And turned to him again and again, called him, met with him personally for advice. And Toussaint, I found, I didn't want to believe it at first. I'm the child of a Holocaust survivor, but there was so much evidence that Toussaint at times fought the regime. And you find him really, there's another scene where other people are blaming the Jews and the British for an attack. And Toussaint says, that's nonsense. You know that comes from within our own German ranks. And the people are so shocked, they reported him to Berlin. He was called on the carpet. He could have lost his life. He could have ended up in a concentration camp. And another thing is this preservation of the Jewish artifacts. You know, we do have the testimony of the people who worked, the Czech people who worked in that house. And they said Toussaint was different from the other Germans. He treated that house with respect. Mm-hmm. And I can tell you, all those artifacts are still there today, and it was amazing for me that they survived the Nazi occupation of that house. So I'm not exonerating him. He was a part of an evil regime. He is a collaborator with that regime. He compromised himself. But the truest judgment on Toussaint is at the end of the war, when the Czechs put all of the Germans they could get their hands on trial, everybody else was put to death. One senior German leader got a life sentence and was ultimately after about 15 years released, and that's Toussaint. So the Czechs also knew he was not as bad as the others. Not to say he's good. In fact, his grandson has spent his life making up for his grandfather's failings.
Wow.
But complicated, very interesting character.
Definitely. And actually, reading the book, knowing your history, and then, of course, being pulled into your mom's story, and then reading about Toussaint, I thought to myself, wow, this sounds like a really sympathetic figure, and it was going to be really difficult for me to talk to you about him. Because he just stood out in the book as someone who was very, not only just very different, but it also it seemed like he had nine lives. Because there were so many times when you thought, okay, this is the end for this guy, and yet he found a way to survive, which was just amazing to me.
The most incredible moment comes when he's taken to prison. After the end of the war, and one by one, all of the Czechs that he worked with to help save Prague also show up in the prison because the Nazis are purging all of the people from the end of the war. Rather, the communists are purging all the people from the end of the war. And at one point, one of the communists who has now been purged by the regime walks in as Toussaint is playing chess with another Czech leader who he partnered with to end the war. And Toussaint does have a very cutting sense of humor. One of the themes of this book is the way that people need a pretty sarcastic, sharp sense of humor as a survival tool. And my mom had it too. She gets the best of me in almost every scene where I describe a conversation between us. Toussaint looks up from his chess game with another Czech leader to the communists who just came in and says, "What are you doing here? I thought your side won." So, he managed to survive everything.
Yeah.
And he just had the luck, even in World War I, when so many people fell around him on the battlefield. Some people, for whatever reason, just seemed to have that luck.
We are speaking with former Ambassador Norman Eisen. He is a senior fellow in governance studies at Brookings, and he is speaking with us from his studio in the Brookings Institute here in Washington, D.C., and we're talking about his fascinating latest book, The Last Palace, Europe's Turbulent Century in Five Lives and One Legendary House. You can tweet him at Norm Eisen. So there are so many fascinating characters in this book. There's Otto himself. There's Toussaint. But then there's also the palace's caretaker, who also
yes.
And honestly, when I'm reading about him, I'm thinking of Alfred the butler in Wayne Manor. Now, I know that I shouldn't be thinking
no.
like that, but that's what I'm thinking because he's seen so much, and it's like he's been there through it all, and he sees it all. But yet, again, we're talking about survival instincts and just the turmoil that we see taking place all around this palace, and yet the caretaker is a constant mainstay.
Pokorny, Mr. Pokorny, the Alfred of our story, is an incredible survivor also, and just a wonderful character, one of my favorites, to tell you the truth. And he is beguiled. He's selected by Otto. And in the same way that the house becomes a living legacy and a symbol of Otto Petschek's vision, Pokorny is put there by Otto and then transcends. He serves that Czechoslovak Democrat, then the Nazi German occupiers, then the Soviets invade the mansion. He serves them. Then the Americans come in and he serves them. So he, too, is a symbol kind of the Czech people who have put up with these empires crisscrossing their lands. There's a saying, it's probably an apocryphal story, Great German Chancellor Bismarck said that he who controls Prague controls Europe.
Wow.
And you see that. You could almost say it about the palace. He who controls the palace controls Europe, because you had these democracy, fascism, communism, then democracy again, with democracy ultimately winning today if we can hang on to it.
You know, and where I think – and I'll bring him in now, Donald Trump. Where I think we see this is going back to your mother, and you look at fascism and the impact that it had on her, and the impact – it was still having on her, even as you had elevated to this pinnacle in your life, where both your life and her life was coming full circle, where you were going back to this house, but yet she just could not rid herself of the thoughts of what took place so many years ago. And I think that's what we're seeing when we wonder, like, what impact the Trump administration will have on this country. You know, when we see things that are taking place, it's not like we're seeing this in a vacuum. The things that we see taking place, these are policies, these are plans, these are motives that could have lasting impact for our country, much as what we saw took place with your mother decades ago, still having an impact today.
Yeah, you know, it is the tragedy of history, and we're going to talk about this on the panel with the descendants of the all of the people who I write about who lived in that house. History is not abstract forces. It has real effects on people's lives, devastating ones. My mother never recovered from the twin traumas, really, of the Holocaust, and then she rebuilt her life, and she had to leave everything behind a second time and flee communism. And kind of she never was able to completely get her life back after that. And, of course, she invested a lot in me as a first-generation American to have all the things that she couldn't have, an education, financial stability, security, a sense of belonging in America, and then the dream of working in the White House, and finally the culmination of her seeing her son going back to the land that she was driven out of twice by the Nazis and the communists, this time the child of the most powerless of people, barely staying alive, coming back representing the most powerful nation on earth. That was a great sense of culmination for my mom, for our whole family, but it cannot erase the pain, and that's one of the things I write about. Still, she took a lot of joy and pride in it.
Yeah. We're with former ambassador to the Czech Republic, Norm Eisen. He's also a senior fellow in governance studies at the Brookings Institute. He is actually with us remotely from the Brookings Institute in Washington, and he's got a fantastic event coming up on Monday where he will be bringing in many of the people who are connected to these fascinating characters in his latest book, The Last Palace, Europe's Turbulent Century in Five Lives and One Legendary House. And there's another person. You've got so many fascinating people in this book. But then there's also Ambassador Lawrence Steinhardt, who seems to go above and beyond just this Herculean effort to take back control, at least for the United States, of this house. And I think one thing, and I hope I'm not giving too much away, but what I find interesting is how, when we look at Toussaint and the reverence that he gave to this palace, and then you look at the Soviets and just the lack of care that they took when they had control of the house. It's very striking, because you would think it would have been the Nazis and not the latter. And then you see Ambassador Steinhardt, you know, and what he does to take back control of this house. This house has withstood so much. And you just wonder, what or who is watching over this palace? And when I say house, that when I say house, I should be slapped for that, because house doesn't do justice for what this place is and what this place has meant to an entire nation.
Well, you know, it does seem that some kind of providence is preserving this magnificent house. Steinhardt was horrified. The third main protagonist in the book, the fourth is Shirley Temple, and then last is my mom. Ambassador Steinhardt was, like me, an American Jewish lawyer. Like me, he ended up as an ambassador because he was friends with a president, FDR. Like me, he worked on a president's campaign. He worked on FDR's campaign in 32. I got this job in part because I went to law school with President Obama. I've known him for decades, since 1988, and he thought it would be a good idea. He loved this story of returning. My family's returned. President Obama's very interested in diaspora. So Steinhardt was a diasporan too. The descendant of European Jews come to America, made good as a lawyer, returned to Europe. And he knew what he was dealing with when many people didn't, because he had been ambassador in Moscow at the time when Stalin was allied with Hitler, the Molotov-Ribbentrop Pact. Before Hitler attacked, ultimately turned and attacked his ally, the Soviet Union. And so he visited the house, and he was horrified by the damage that had been done when the Soviets there were only there for a few weeks. And he thought they would come back, and he set out on a mission, protect this house. And he succeeded.
Yeah. Great book. Thanks so much, Ambassador Norman Eisen. He is a senior fellow in governance studies at Brookings. The book is titled The Last Palace, Europe's Turbulent Century in Five Lives in One Legendary House. Ambassador Norman Eisen, thanks so much for being with us.